Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road very, very shortly. I'm putting together a very aggressive schedule of crab cakes in April, including some aggressive baseball. We're going to be down at Fadley's Live on Fridays from 2 until 5. Luke Jones is going to be eating shrimp salad. I'm going to be giving away Maryland Lottery scratch-offs, just like this one. The 10 times the cash. Our friends at Window Nation, 86690Nation, will be there with us, as will Jiffy Lube, MultiCare, and Liberty Pure Solutions, our newest sponsor, getting me clean water. I'm in the orange glass right now, because I'm drinking the orange Kool-Aid, but there's purple Kool-Aid to be consumed as well. Luke Jones will be out in Owings Mills when things resume. We are both going to be in Sarasota in a couple of weeks. One of us is going to be allowed in, the Caucasian, will be allowed into the baseball games and the football owners meetings, and I shall be chauffeuring around Florida. We used to go to Indianapolis, run around the combine, and see folks and see old friends. I was not in Indianapolis last week, but this guy was. He was there for the Underwear Olympics, and apparently the offensive linemen look good. We're going to need that here in Baltimore. This guy has scanned the decades, going back to the 1996 Ravens. He once wrote for Yahoo. He is now at NFL.com and doing great things and breaking down the draft and trying to figure out who we're taking with the 30th pick. Eric Edholm, our defending champion, is back here. I missed you at all those late night 2 a.m. cigar, steakhouse, whiskey events last week, man.
I missed everybody. I was in bed by 11 most nights, it's sad to say, but it was still a good week. I just don't have the late night stamina I once did.
Nor do I. That's why I abstain from all of this, but the thing's grown a lot. I mean, speak about the combine. I haven't been since before the plague. Once they started taking the media, we went to the other room in the back of the room, and there wasn't any reason to really be there broadcasting. We stopped going, but it was one of my favorite events for people, for meeting people, for being involved in the league. And yeah, a lot of tampering going on there, even before there was pre-tampering, and you know this.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin O'Connell, Vikings head coach, kind of made a thinly veiled comment about his quarterback and maybe other people meddling and getting involved early. But yeah, it's happened for years. You just have to duck into the bars and coffee shops and little restaurants there off the beaten path, and you'll find somebody involved with the NFL, whether it's an agent or an executive or whatnot. But a lot of obviously socializing, and you hear plenty of stuff. And you know, it's funny, you look back and some of the things you hear in late February, early March, ends up becoming true draft-wise when it comes to late April. So you try to keep your ears peeled and write down the juiciest stuff you can.
Well, dude, you've been doing this a long, long time. You know, draft coverage, and it's come a long way from Joel Buschbaum and Mel Kiper, and certainly you're on the inside, on the league side. We see the coverage from all the networks, and it's all the rage on Twitter, too. You know, somebody's taken with the third-round pick or whatever, when DaCosta doesn't even know what he's doing with the third-round pick right now. But top-down, let's start with the Ravens, and let's start with you're out in Illinois. You cover the league. You've covered the league for three decades. What do you make of the Ravens right now? I mean, the word I keep using with Luke the last few weeks, and this is the Bills could be said the same thing. The Chiefs just won the Super Bowl. Diminished. They're going to be a diminished version of what they were last year to some degree when all the coaches got taken out the back door. They're about to lose Queen. They're just going to lose a whole bunch of players. And I think the reality of the salary cap and the reality of the league is when you're 13-4 and you got home field advantage and the AFC Chiefs, you better win because you're going to have a diminished team next year.
Yeah, there was a missed opportunity. I think everybody felt like Baltimore was the best team heading into the playoffs, and then they weren't all of a sudden, right? I mean, obviously, one matchup, one team that has your number can end your, turn your lights out quick, so to speak. But, I still think they're going to – if Lamar plays anywhere close to the level he did last year, obviously the defense, you wonder if the magic of Mike McDonald is gone and what will be made of this unit and 31-year-old defensive coordinator taking over. Certainly there are going to be altered expectations on that side of the ball, but they add a little juice to the running game maybe and bolster that offensive line, one or two pieces on defense, even with some guys walking possibly. I still see one of the two or three best teams in the AFC and you never know, right? I think the Kansas City Chiefs at midseason last year were considered a middling team among the contenders, and things change so quickly in this league. I'm not writing them off, but I hear what you're saying.
Well, there's great pedigree here. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
No
and
doubt.
They go finding Kyle Hamiltons and they go finding players and spending their money wisely on Roquan Smith and on Lamar. But there's other money that wasn't so wisely spent. And the Ronnie Stanley thing, maybe the Marlon Humphrey thing and where they are. And we've seen the Bills dump half their team with cap money issues this week. The offensive line for the Ravens is the thing we're going to be talking about. And I'm sure out in Indianapolis, and I looked up and down your Twitter, Eric, and the offensive line's the rage for everyone. I mean, they don't pick the 30th. If they have to replace a left tackle, that's one thing. And Zeitler, I mean, who loved it here, apparently, couldn't come to terms with him. And then they franchised Madubuike, put a lot of money on that side of the ball. The offensive line is what we're going to be watching here because as it goes, Lamar goes and the offense goes.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you could probably replace a guard in-house, but then the tackle situation, as you pointed out, Stanley dealing with injuries, you know, he talked about not playing up to his standards this year. And, you know, the cost to keep him is very high. So, you know, Morgan Moses too, I would say is eminently replaceable. So, you know, his salary, whether it's deemed too much and whatnot, obviously that remains to be seen. But yeah, I mean, that's a position that, you know, it seems to work out where the Ravens one or two biggest needs or even two or three biggest needs often either align with the free agent class or the draft class, the strengths of both of those, not always perfectly, but it always seems like there's some sort of symmetry there. And I think, you know, that adds a layer of savvy that we, you know, we always sort of throw flowers at the Ravens scouting department for good reason. They're one of the best groups in the business, even as, you know, they lose guys, you know, obviously there's some people leaving this year. Joe's going out west and getting his opportunity to run a franchise and run a scouting department. But they keep moving and they've kept the Aussie sort of spirit in the building. Obviously still a mentor to a lot of those guys. And Eric's done a great job coordinating it. But yeah, this year offensive line is going to be one of the stronger positions in the draft. It wasn't so last year. And I think it's going to be a really fruitful group overall. Tackles, centers, guards, really there's a little bit of everything for everybody's type of blocking too.
Well, Luke and I talked this week about the Stanley situation, whether you really want him to be your left tackle at any price or whether you feel like, you know, we should upgrade and or get somebody that we know can be there for 17 weeks and or if you got to live with Patrick McCary as a left tackle, that's different. But if Morgan Moses were to exit, I mean, Linderbaum, great pick. I mean, they solidified that position the way they hadn't since Matt Burke left here a decade ago. But you're not going to change four out of your five offensive linemen in one offseason when you went 13-4. Or are you? I don't know. I mean, the Bengals went through this a couple years ago. The Chiefs certainly went through it when they played into January. Both of those franchises played into Super Bowls in January where they struggled because their offensive line was banged up, quite frankly. I don't know how the Ravens would feel about game 19 of Ronnie Stanley next year, you know? But the question is, you really going to replace 3/5, 4/5 of your offensive line in this offseason?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot, right? Obviously they've done their best to try to draft and develop some talent there. Falele and Ben Cleveland and, you know, other guys they've drafted in recent years and college free agents and whatnot. And Linderbaum you mentioned, and, you know, they've done a good job of sort of keeping the pantry pretty stocked, but I think you're right. There's a good chance that we're looking at least two, if not three starters that could be replaced this off season. So,
well, Zeitler and Moses, they went out to the market to get those guys, right? I mean, so if that's an indication, they'd rather have veterans, but they got cap issues. They're, you know, they're gonna have to play cheap somewhere on the roster because it's not going to be a quarterback anymore.
Yeah, and then it makes me wonder, you know, it is a kind of a two or three dimensional thing too. If you know, we just left the combine and I think a lot of people were buzzing about the depth of the offensive line group. So maybe that sort of gives some teams comfort in knowing that they can cut a high salary offensive lineman and lean back on the draft. That now opens a free agent onto the market. So, you know, we're looking at who the free agents are today. Everyone's got their, you know, top 100 lists. Greg Rosenthal, NFL media does 101 just to be a little extra, right? But those lists change as veterans get released, whether they're from the Ravens or from other teams. So, you know, you have to really kind of have some vision about what offensive linemen might come free, who's available currently, and what the draft offers too. And you maybe want to get a mix of a little youth, a little experience, and then somebody, the Ravens have done a good job at reclamation projects too. So maybe that second, third, fourth year veteran who never quite got a chance in their first spot ends up flourishing if they get a starting role in Baltimore or wherever else.
Well, and I think the other, part of this for them with the salary cap issues that they have at this point, they've been so good at drafting, but more than that, they've really moved into that area where they've gotten very good at identifying pro personnel players. And that's a tribute to George Kokinas and to Eric that Van Noy can come in and not just be a guy and be a productive guy, but be a difference maker. Justin Houston, Kyle Van Noy, they're Clowney. I mean, right? I mean, they have managed to get tread. I mean, going back to Trevor Price and Anquan Boldin, to your point, picking up players that they know can play the game at the right price.
Yeah, right. Steve Smith and others too. I mean, where they've gotten guys that other teams have passed on, maybe, thought to be past their expiration date, or, the Ravens have a defined role for them where they say, all right, we're not going to ask you to play 60 snaps at defensive end. We're going to rotate you and we're going to have you play on passing downs or whatever your strength is. So yeah, I think the marriage of the pro personnel, the scouting, and also the college scouting, and knowing, where do we have to dip into resources wise, and where's the biggest and deepest pool, and where's the pool where we can maybe kind of skim the top and still get something pretty decent. So I think that applies when you have a position like offensive line, or some teams it's the secondary, what have you, defensive line, where you may end up having to replace three or four pieces on a unit. But I would argue nowhere on the football field does cohesion matter more than that offensive line. So the moves they make are obviously going to be pretty critical, and it'll be fun to figure out. I mean, Lamar can cover some of that, of course, but it'll be interesting to see how they fill those holes.
Eric Edholm is here. He covers all things NFL draft for NFL.com. We've been friends for a long, long time, trudging around the various owners' meetings, combines, Super Bowl weeks, and just football games in general. He is out in Illinois. He just got back from Indianapolis. He'll please follow him the next 5-6 weeks leading up to the draft. Everything that that he does will be on the money with this. The running back situation, not just here, but around the league. I'm friends with Chad Wiesling, who lives here, who represents Josh Jacobs and trying to get running back signed. We've had the whole debate here about Derrick Henry, even had that back at the trading deadline. I don't know who's going to run the ball for the Ravens, and I don't think it's going to be Saquon Barkley or Derrick Henry, given cap situations of where they are or in a depressed market. I wonder who signs the running backs. Who's going to give them money? And even with the draft, it's become quite a depressed thing that they don't even get their due on draft day. So if you're running back, you're not going to get paid on draft day. You're not going to get paid after draft day. And if you go run really well the first 3-4 years, you're still not going to get paid. So it's a weird thing, but I look at the Ravens and say, yeah, Luke loves to say they set records and they run for more 6 yards a carry. But who are their running backs? And who are the offensive linemen going to be? And this is the time of the year we have to figure that out, because I don't think it's going to be Gus Edwards. And I certainly don't think it's going to be J.K. Dobbins at this point.
Yeah, I mean, especially after it was a weird way for Gus to, if that is indeed his last game, we expected him to carry a big part of the load in the Chiefs game, didn't end up happening. He made the most of his touches, just didn't get very many of them, four of them or whatever it was. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was regrettable the way they handled that game. And I think they're obviously knowing that, given Dobbins' injury history and like everything you just laid out, even with Keaton Mitchell, he's also coming off the injury, what he provided last year, you have to have something a little more dependable. And so if it's the draft, let's say, then, maybe you can, and the Ravens are so good at letting the draft come to them and getting value and identifying the right talents and stuff. I mean, they do it as well as anybody. So maybe an Audric Estime from Notre Dame, kind of a power guy between the tackles, always falling forward. Maybe he's your Gus replacement. Maybe the market's a little soft on an Austin Ekeler and people aren't as interested as his name value might suggest he would be. So, maybe he opens up as kind of your change-up option or something like that. The draft, it's funny that everyone kind of panned this class, because last year we had Bijan Robinson, number 8 overall. We had Jahmyr Gibbs go number 12. It was considered a good running back class. This one hasn't gotten the same amount of praise, but I would argue that if you look hard enough and you're you know, willing to sort of scope out some of these guys. I mean, Jonathan Brooks, had he not gotten hurt late in the year from Texas, the guy who sat behind Bijan and Roschon Johnson there, you know, he might have been the next first round guy at that position. I know they're rare. I know they're exceedingly less valuable, but, you know, that's somebody who could be had mid second round or late second round, perhaps, maybe early third. So that's right in the Ravens' wheelhouse, too. So I think there are options out there. I think you obviously put the emphasis on maybe corner, offensive line, and there'll still be backs there for you, whether it's sweating out some of these veterans and bringing down their asking price, or being patient in the draft and getting somebody on day three or something like that.
Is there a left tackle at 30 that you would say, I mean, how many left tackles are going to be off the board by the time they get there?
Yeah, good question. I mean, the sure things that'll be off the board will be Joe Alt from Notre Dame. Troy Fatanu, I think, is going to be gone by that point. I would guess Talis Fuaga, probably Amarius Mims. He's an unknown for me, although his athletic traits are so good that I would be shocked if he's still there at the end of the first round. So I'm going to say he's a no. J.C. Latham, probably a no. Fashanu,
that's five or six guys. That's a lot.
Guyton, what are we up to? Yeah, 6-7 already.
Well, I mean, we're saying it's a deep class, and deep class means that. Deep class doesn't mean you get guys in the third round. Deep class means the top 10 are going to go in the first two rounds, right?
Right, I think so. And so I'm guess I'm kind of thinking of guys like, boy, you have to kind of go down to Jordan Morgan is a possibility. He's sort of a late first, early second rounder. Some teams have him as a guard. Some teams view him as a tackle. You know, it might be a perfect situation where he comes in and starts at guard year one and gets groomed for tackle. He's not super long, but I like the player a lot. You know, checks off a lot of Ravens boxes, I think, in terms of that. Cooper Beebe would be a more of a second round pick, but he's just such a, I mean, he's kind of like Steve Avila for the Rams last year, who ended up just starting and playing every single snap year one, early second round pick. He was just like, set it and forget it. You know, he was that solid a player. You know, the kid from BYU, I could see possibly Kingsley Sumataya, I think could be a late first, early second rounder. So they have to at least consider moving up if they want one of that top six or seven guys that I listed off. But, it may be a little bit of a no man's land in that spot.
Eric Edholm is our guest. He's at NFL.com. We're talking some football around here. He has covered the combine. He'll be on to the draft momentarily, and all things insider on the draft coverage the next 6 weeks. Quarterbacks, it always affects everything up in the top five, top 10 teams trying to get up there. Where are we with quarterbacks 6 weeks out on this draft?
Yeah, there are four who are for sure going in round one. J.J. McCarthy is probably the one that may surprise people a little bit, right? He led Michigan to a title, but how much did he really do? I think, you know, this is either a case of teams having really good vision on what he could be, or it could be a case of, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, in the sense that, you know, he wasn't asked to do a lot, but, you know, when he did, he was pretty good. But you know, if you have a team that runs the ball 32 straight times against Penn State, you're telling me the quarterback is worth a top 10 pick? Well, I don't know, but that's what people around the league are telling me. So McCarthy, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels. In fact, Daniels could be number two, and it wouldn't shock me if McCarthy's number three in that list. Those four are guarantees, I think. Then it comes the question, does, you know, a team like Baltimore get an offer to trade out of round one, somebody wanting to move into round one for a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix? That's probably, you know, those are the two that have the best shot. And look, if a desperate team like Denver at 12, who can't trade up, or I suppose the Raiders.
I hear they're going to have Vikings, some cap issues too in Denver.
Right. Yeah. Denver's, the Wilson thing, they have very few picks. Trading up is going to be very tough. You're going to have to trade next year's number one and what? I don't know. Man, maybe they could take Nix where they are in round one. So I'd set the number at about 4.5 right now if I had to put a Vegas-type number on how many QBs go in the first round. And then Nix and Penix will be in that borderline group, depending on how the next month or so shake out.
Yeah, I guess for the Ravens, the secondary probably would be the next place to go. We talk about wide receiver here all the time. But let's talk about the secondary and what's available there as well, because there's coming a point here for the Ravens where the Ronald Darbys are only going to get you so far, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a good corner group. Safety, that group's grown on me a little bit. I don't know if there's any special prospect, but let's talk about the corners. I think, and I'm just going down my list right now. You know, a Kamari Lassiter from Georgia is somebody who I could see is kind of a little bit of a thinner guy, but he's super competitive, you know, cut back on penalties, made more plays in 2023. Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama, obviously, you know, a place the Ravens have done a lot of shopping over the years. You know, he kind of reminds me of Marlon Humphrey a little bit in that he's just so solid and dependable. And, you know, there isn't a lot of flash or pizzazz to his game, kind of belying his name a little bit, right? You got a guy named Kool-Aid, you expect fireworks, but he's a really steady performer. The more I watched him, the more I thought, you know, he's may not be special, but he's really darn solid. So another kind of borderline first round, maybe early second round pick. Cooper DeJean from Iowa hasn't worked out. You know, he's sort of the Kyle Hamilton of safeties. I can see him playing safety or nickel or outside. You know, he's a versatile
player. Well, Hamilton's
player.
Kind of been a tweener, game changer kind of guy for them. I mean, the way they've used Hamilton's been brilliant.
Yeah. And maybe there's too much overlap there with Cooper DeJean, but if you wanted to make him an outside corner, I think he could play it. He's got the athleticism to play out there, punt returner too. So, you know, he's in that kind of 20 to 35 overall pick mix, somewhere in that range. Nate Wiggins from Clemson, really fast guy, made a couple of big hustle plays. He chased down, you know, tackles after or turnovers for touchdowns. So, or, you know, preventing touchdowns, I should say, blocked a field goal. He's got a kind of a cool, pastiche of experience, but a little thin. I mean, you know, that's the worry. He can run all day, but can he body up with some of those bigger receivers? So, but all those guys I just mentioned, I think, you know, even Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri, he's been set back by injury a little bit, but he absolutely fits the Ravens template as far as toughness, willingness to tackle, competitive player, you know, takes his you know, takes pride in his coverage, didn't give up more than 20 catches last year, I'd say in 9-10 games. So, you know, I mean, those are all guys that I think could go somewhere between 20 and 40 or so. You know, assuming that, you know, if there is that possibility of sliding back into round two.
Who's your favorite player in the draft? Who do you love? Who are you putting the red star on?
Yeah, I mentioned Cooper Beebe a minute ago. I mean, it's weird to pick a guard, but he's played tackle for him. Just a really solid, dependable player. If we're going up the ladder a little bit.
Where's he going to get drafted? Where's he going?
Beebe, I think, will go. He could slip into the last couple picks around one, but I suspect, you know, 35 to 45, somewhere in that range, you know, early to mid second, really good football player. You know, maybe a low ceiling, but a high floor. I like him a lot. I'm just trying to think of, I mean, Quinyon Mitchell, I tell you what, the kid from Toledo, you don't think about Toledo in the top of the draft very often, but you're going to have to this year because he's legit. I didn't even mention him when you asked me about corners because there's no chance in heck he's going to be there anywhere close to 30. I don't think he makes it to 20. I think he's going to be somewhere in the, you know, from the 10th pick to the 20th pick, somewhere in there. And his workout, his Senior Bowl performance, his last two seasons in the MAC. And, you know, he's held up against some better talent when he's had the opportunity. I just think the kid's special, and I didn't really realize it. Brock Bowers is another one who's really fun at tight end. He didn't work out, but, you know, we've seen enough of him the last 3 years to know he just – finds ways to get yards after the catch. He's almost like a smaller Mark Andrews, if you will.
Eric, it's always a pleasure to check in with you and catch up. The years get away from us all these years into this thing.
No doubt.
But the draft is big business. I'm sure you go up to Detroit or do you stay home and watch? How do you do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'm going to go, man. I like Detroit. Everybody's like, oh, you have to go to Detroit this year. I said, oh, it's kind of a cool town, man. It's rebuilding.
They make
it's
nice pizza there. They have a Greek casino downtown. It's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to the ballpark. You know, I went to training camp a couple years ago and caught a Tigers game. You know, they had like 25 wins at the time, but it was cool. It was a good park. So love Detroit, cool little downtown seat. I'll be there for 4 or 5 days or whatever it is, and we'll make the most of it.
All right, man. Well, listen, I'll try to check in with you afterward. Maybe once a year or once every 6 months. But you know, the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl again. Just ask anybody around here. But
right.
But a really tough off season for the Ravens, and I guess that's where we begin with this to say if they can go 13-4 or 14-3 or 12-5 or whatever the numbers add up to be at this point. I'm so used to saying 12-4 and 11, you know, 11-5. But they're going to be a quality team next year. It's just how do they get there? And I have confidence that they're a playoff team. I just know the attrition part of this was the hard part after Flacco got the contract. And I think that's the hard part after Russell Wilson got there. It's the hard part for every one of these organizations.
You better be right. You're going to spend the money on a quarterback. You do it, but you make sure that you are making the right decision and how it's structured too. So you're absolutely right. The Ravens did the right thing with Lamar. They know that. We know that. They're going to be back. And look, as I said with Mahomes, you know, it wasn't the Chiefs' best year. They just had the best playoffs. And sometimes that's all you need.
Coach Billick said to me the day after, while everybody here was bleeding, and then, of course, the next day, the Orioles get sold. So it changed the mood around here a little bit. Coach Billick said, it's not the best team that wins. It's the team that plays the best. And I'm like, yeah. That's correct. Eric Edholm, he is at NFL.com, and you can follow him out on all the social media channels as he sharpens up his number two pencil to move those picks around and to have how many mocks are you up to yet? Am I mocking your mock draft yet?
Only one. Yeah, I've only done one so far. I got another one in a couple weeks and then one more right before the draft.
I know. So you're only going to do three. All right.
Yes.
He's 1.0. Make sure you're there for 2.0. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. NFL draft, opening day, Orioles, all sorts of good stuff. Stay with us.